Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Joe Okada from Madison, Wisconsin. It's the first time having Joe on, and it's kind of a long time coming. I've been a fan of Joe's for a while now, at least a handful of years. He's had some really notable walleye tournament appearances and high finishes in the last handful of years. He's been guiding for a really long time. We get to know him, as far as his fishing career here in this interview, just because it is his first time on. It's fun to just kind of, you know, get some of that backstory and sort of learn where his experiences come from and all of that. But not only is it a first-time guest in Joe on this particular episode, we are also introducing a first-time topic. We're featuring a topic that I've never, you know, had anybody talk about on this podcast before, and that is catching walleyes on flies. But it's not a real new topic in the industry. I mean, catching walleyes on flies has been around for a long time, generations. And, I've consumed a lot of the content. I've just kind of been trying to verse myself a little bit in this. It's not something I've ever done before, so some of my questions are probably a little bit elementary. But Joe does a great job sort of breaking down the scenarios, the situations that he's been in, and just some of his experience with, you know, being successful targeting walleyes on flies. And, you know, I think that, it's definitely a cold water deal, cold water springs, current, rivers, just the way that these flies are typically rigged and utilized in the walleye world in the Midwest. But I feel like it's probably more versatile than that, to be totally honest with you. For me personally, it's a little underappreciated. And I just listening to Joe talk about this definitely gives me a new respect, a new appreciation for it. And I feel like it'd be really, really fun, to just try to, just give myself an excuse to try this. But anytime I get a chance to talk about something new and talk about it with somebody as well-versed and just a great guy in Joe Okada, just really fires me up and gets me excited. So new guest, new topic, Joe Okada. We're talking catching walleyes on flies. Let's get to it. This JMO podcast is brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales in West Bend, Wisconsin. Cedar Lake Sales is Southern Wisconsin's largest Crestliner dealership, so whatever you're looking for, whether it's something family-oriented or a pontoon, maybe you're looking for a traditional fishing boat, or step it up to something that you can travel around and fish tournaments in, they are well-known to have it all easy to check out in their huge indoor heated showrooms. Now, with a great service department and the confidence of their customers, Cedar Lake Sales is celebrating 55 years of trusted business. Again, if you are shopping for a boat, your shopping is not done until you've talked to a salesperson at Cedar Lake Sales. For more information on what they got, what they offer, head to the link in the description of this podcast. That's www.cedarlakesales.com. To start it off, it's customary on here. Anybody that comes on for the first time, I want to get a little bit of your origin story. Let us know, where you're from. You and I have never met. I don't know anything very personal about you from a fishing standpoint. I'm hoping you can share a little bit of, where you're from, where you cut your teeth in fishing, some of your mentors were, just anything, any sort of significant life experiences early on that you feel like cultivated, who you are as an angler today, man. Go ahead with that.
Well, first off, congrats on your new addition.
Thanks, man.
And I just wanted to say that because I apologize if you can hear one screaming above my head right now.
Oh, no. But but if there is, that sounds like your life is a little colorful, too.
I got a new little one. He just turned 3 months old yesterday. And,
nice.
So now we got two kids in the house. One's four and then that one. And it was actually right around 6 years old is when my first memories of becoming really attracted to fishing kind of latched on, and it's been full steam ahead ever since. There was just something magical about catching a fish that you don't even explain. It's just in people or it's not. And it just turned into something it's turned into finding a niche, in this fishing industry as a career, as a result of that. So I grew up in South Central Wisconsin, and we briefly moved to Michigan, but we kind of came right back to this area, which is right around the Madison chain of lakes. which is part of the Yahara River system, and it's just a bunch of inland lakes tied together. But they're very diverse fisheries. They're very fertile. They're loaded with fish, and they were a great place to just become, well-rounded in lots of different ways to catch fish, because there's so many different moving parts to these waters. I got to experience a lot of different types of fishing, and we have cool rivers nearby too. But I really primarily played in the lakes, and that's where I ended up starting a guide business right out of high school. And the bread and butter guide trips were actually bluegills, but during that, I guided for them for about 20 years almost, and walleye, smallmouth, bluegills, and other panfish, and that kind of just grew into creating relationships with other industry people, and just navigating my career path through those relationships into where we are today. But that also includes some tournament fishing, and I don't guide so much anymore, but I guess that's a brief backstory of where the fishing bug has taken me. And here we are today, still in South Central Wisconsin, playing on the same bodies of water, but I get the opportunity to go play on all sorts of different bodies of water. And when you mentioned that head to head that year in particular, they took us to bodies of water I've never seen before. And that's always my favorite thing to do, is look at a piece of water for the first time with my eyes and try to break it down. That's what keeps it really exciting these days.
I want to dig into a couple of things, because I find it interesting, people that have, you know, really, you know, had or have, you know, a history in guiding, and also tournament angling, because those are two wildly different things. So for you, I kind of want to go, you know, starting with your guide right out of high school, like, tell me a little bit what that was like.
Guiding right away was an uphill battle, because you were in the process of learning the waters intimately. You were young, so that was a barrier in the boat initially, because you're the young kid with minimal experience, and people are trusting you with, you know, money to provide them a good experience. So I always felt a lot of pressure on the front end of my guiding career to overproduce for people to make up for my young age and lack of experience that I had at the time. And I always remember a high level of anxiety leading into guide trips with all the unknown variables down. You know, are the fish going to bite today? Is the weather going to hold so I can, you know, justify keeping them out here and getting, you know, getting paid, and making sure that everybody, you know, your goal is to create a repeat customer. So you had to, you know, you treated everybody as though you just laid out the red carpet for them so that they wanted to give you a call again, or you wouldn't have enough business to sustain the guide model. And over the years, it got a lot easier, you know, as the repeats became more frequent and reliable. I started working at a bait shop nearby. It was a place called D&S Bait and Tackle, and that was a place to generate new referrals. And one of my biggest mentors was the owner of that bait shop, Gene Dellinger, at the time. And he passed on, you know, decades of experience through conversation over the years I worked there that helped escalate my knowledge of the lakes and understanding of the seasonal patterns, so that I was always able to put people on fit. Not always, everyone has tough days, but consistently put people on, you know, good trips on the water. And even if it was a tough day, you still have to provide a good experience. And a good experience, even if it's with a lack of fishing activity, can generate a repeat customer. But those were the two jobs I was working at the time. I was either in the bait shop, or I was walking out of the bait shop to hop in my truck and, you know, fill up a half day guide trip after I was done working there. And that was my daily routine. And I did that for a lot of years. The problem is, when in this neck of the woods, unless you're also an ice fishing guide, which I was not, your season is very condensed. So you've got to pack your trips in tightly into a short season, And, you know, for panfish in particular, when kids are out of school, you've got May, June, July, and part of August. And then your season is on the tail end already, you know? So then what I started to explore was I went out and got my captain's license at a really young age, and I started to guide on Green Bay and took my business to the Upper Peninsula on Little Bay to Knock and spent a lot of years up there finishing out the last, you know, 6+ weeks of every season in the middle of the night doing nocturnal trips up there for giant walleyes, because that was something I looked forward to every year. And honestly, that was one of the best experiences of my life, because when you're fishing in pitch black up there, it's pretty crazy, because you lose your sense of sight, obviously, at night. And so feel becomes a really big thing. And so I believe that I became a much better troller just by how I was able to, you know, feel a boat pull through the water and feel a spread pull through even without visual indicators. It's just you being in touch with your boat and how everything is feeling. And so all those experiences helped build a skill set that made me feel like I could start to compete in tournaments. And that's when I kind of jumped into the tournament game in 2008, about 8 years after I graduated high school. And that was a really cool thing too. And like you said, those are two opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, when you're guiding, you're providing an experience for people in your boat in addition to trying to catch fish. But when it's tournament time, you get to completely hyper focus on the task at hand at just catching a walleye. You know, there's no one to communicate with really in the boat other than your partner, but it's just, you get to have a tunnel vision. And I felt like that was such an awesome release from the day-to-day guide trips that I just latched on to tournament fishing extremely hard at that point, because it was almost like a vacation for my brain to just go completely dedicate every thought I had to just catching fish. You know, it was totally different mindset, and I loved it, and I still do to this day.
So, you know, how would you describe yourself today, like in the industry, as far as fishing goes? What are the things that you're doing fishing wise today, just to kind of get us up to speed here?
Sure. Well, after the, okay, so to be completely transparent, after the 21 season of Head to Head, that was the most fun I've ever had in all my years of tournament fishing, because like what I told you on how I gravitated towards competitive fishing, it was, you know, just you and your tunnel vision and how you could change your mindset on the water, you know, in a good way. And Head to Head with, you know, limited practice and no information and just me against you in your boat, it was the ultimate format for my brain, you know, because by day one, you were still in pre-fishing mode basically. And you just felt like you felt really loose and on the fly developing things as they went. And it was a 4 or 5 day competition. So it was a marathon you got to fully commit to. So after that season, which was a really fun and pretty successful season, that tournament ended or that series ended. And the following year, I just didn't have the same fire in my belly to go play in the other tournaments with the same intensity that I just got done experiencing, which is weird. And but I'm sure other people may be able to relate to that. If you find something you really like and it goes away and you have to revert back to other things, it's different. But anyways, that the following year was a little slower for competitive fishing, but I've in the meantime, since the guiding has tapered off a little bit, I've basically started my own ad agency, working for a few of my business partners, just, you know, doing different media and advertising roles for each of the companies, and that kept me busy for that year. And it's been that way since 2000 and 15, really. But that's become my day job, if you will. And the tournament fishing, I still have that competitive itch to scratch. And so I'm always looking for other playgrounds to play on. I had a lot of fun last year fishing the AIM division with one of my best friends that I actually met up in Beta Knock a lot of years ago. His name's Guy Ingebretson. And I can kind of go back to a brief story of how I met him, because it'll tie it together. But when I met him up there, he pulls up to me one day at the motel, and he's like, and most people that pull up to the motel, they pull up to me just to get a fishing report, you know, before they head out for the day. And this guy pulls up to me and he says, "Hey, this is a good place to stay?" I said, "Yeah." And then he just drives away. I was like, "Wait, don't you want to know where they're biting?" But he didn't. And I thought that was a little odd. So over the course of a few days, we ended up talking, and I realized he didn't want anything out of me. He's a total fishing geek. And the more we talked, the more I realized he's like a very high IQ fishing geek. And it made me want to start asking him questions. And over the years, we got to, you know each other. We became really good friends. And it's awesome to have a circle of people around you that are at that fishing geek level that you feel like you're in, and you don't feel weird just bouncing the stupidest ideas off of them as you're compiling data and bouncing ideas off each other. Anyways, he's turned into that guy. So we fished together last year in the AIM circuit and had a blast. And we fished the Rivers division, which was a new division for AIM. And that was a lot of fun because, like I said, going to new places and exploring new bodies of water is what I love more than anything. And all those pools are places where I've never spent much time, and I've never got to dedicate a tournament season to fishing current before. So last year was a real learning opportunity to go play with one of my best friends on that. And that was a lot of fun. So I'll probably do a few more of those AIMs this year, maybe a couple NWTs just to stay busy. But we've got, you know, a couple jobs and a couple kids and tournaments on the brain here. So we'll just try to make the schedules work where they can and fish where I can. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I love that. I love those personal stories. I mean, that's so much of fishing, you know. I mean, fishing for so many people, it's just memories and people and relationships. And, you know, we talk technical information here just to learn more about fishing. But the big picture is, you know, it just kind of contributes to that stuff. All the stuff you're talking about, the relationships,
100%.
And having fun in the boat. That's so just, it's relative to each and every person. You know, you interpret that for yourself, success, I mean. And, you know, and I'm definitely fascinated by the tournament stuff. I don't do it particularly. Like I need to take a little bit more opportunities if I could to fish a few tournaments here or there, not because I think I could win them, but I feel like there's a lot of learning involved. As you said, you know, like, you know, you're somebody with so many years of experience, you know, so you've forgotten a lot more about fishing than realistically a lot of people your age or even older than you wish they knew ever. And you're still looking for opportunities to learn more. You're not entering tournaments, just the ones that you think you could go and win them all, even though you probably feel way to some extent. You're utilizing those opportunities, spending your time and resources to go put yourself in a challenging environment and compete against other great anglers on their home body of water, and something that you know, I think that speaks a lot about you. Absolutely, I think it does, and I think that is I think that's awesome. I think, you know, that would be a promotion, if anything. If somebody's thinking about tournaments, don't just look at one that's down the road that you think you can win. I mean, that's, you know, that's cool too, but you know, that's how I view tournament angling. That the conversations about tournament angling or tournament anglers, my favorite ones are asking them about, you know, the one that, whether win, lose, or draw, or finish at the bottom of the pack, the one that they learned the most from, or, you know, those types of experiences.
Absolutely. You got to get out of your comfort zone. And then whatever you take out of that event that puts you so far out of your comfort zone, all that hindsight and everything you learned, you can reapply it to something that you're comfortable with, and you're that much better, you know?
This JMO podcast is brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales in West Bend, Wisconsin. Cedar Lake Sales is Southern Wisconsin's largest Crestliner dealership, so whatever you're looking for, whether it's something family-oriented or a pontoon, maybe you're looking for a traditional fishing boat or step it up to something that you can travel around and fish tournaments in, they are well known to have it all easy to check out in their huge indoor heated showrooms. Now, with a great service department and the confidence of their customers, Cedar Lake Sales is celebrating 55 years of trusted business. Again, if you are shopping for a boat, your shopping is not done until you've talked to a salesperson at Cedar Lake Sales. For more information on what they got, what they offer, head to the link in the description of this podcast. That's www.cedarlakesales.com. This is going to be a hard pivot here into some more of the, you know, meat and potatoes of this conversation. I want to caption this something along the lines of walleyes on flies, because as a fan of yours recently, you come out with, some videos that, flies, using flies for walleyes. You know, I think it's a river thing. If you go on YouTube, there's a bunch of it there if you look for it. Like me, I'm kind of obsessed with YouTube fishing one thing, I've never done a show even talking about, tying flies, or the application, the situations, the locations, the history of it. Like, talk about other presentations, we just beat them like dead horses around here. But that is one that I know nothing about and I've heard nothing about. And I think this is going to be one of those years where there's going to be a lot of river fishing. I think that those videos you came out with, and I'm talking about, go on YouTube and look up Joe Akata's YouTube page. For starters, you'll see what I'm talking about. Just a few weeks ago, coming out with some.
Thanks for the plug, Taylor.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about it, and honestly, me and maybe I'm the only one, but I think that there's quite a few people out there that probably need to be introduced to this topic, and maybe hear as much history about it or just anything, anything revolving around kind of the conception or just sort of the, the idea and strategy behind it, catching walleyes on flies and we'll get into rigging them and cadence and things like that. Where do we got to start with this conversation, man? Because Joel, I've never had you on before and I've never talked about this topic before. So I have no idea where we're going to go here. I'm going to just throw the topic in your lap and you tell me where we got to start.
It's definitely not an absolute substitute for anything anybody fishes rivers for it right now, but it can absolutely complement so many different situations. If you just want another tool in the toolbox, you basically have, depending on your regulations in your state, you can have, one, two, three little streamer flies on a rig that you're either casting out or slowly pulling upstream or, slowly drifting downstream with. You can do so many different things with them, but it's just a little puff of bucktail on a little light wire hook. And the delivery system that you'd pick to deliver those down there and how you decide to fish them, I mean, you can put these things just inches off the bottom. They float around like a little minnow. And when you give them a little tap, they kind of dart just like a little helpless minnow does as it's kind of startled maybe. And then as it kind of relaxes back in the current, it settles back in. So it's the most natural looking thing you've ever seen underwater. If you're just trying to imitate a tiny little minnow down there, and our rivers around here are really receptive to that presentation. Some days it's not always the big fish presentation, it doesn't seem like, but I've caught a lot of big fish on flies, so it's not like they ignore it, but it's just such a fun little way to catch them. And when you have fish, if you find yourself in a spot where fish are very concentrated and you want to keep making repetitive casts that pinpoint that concentration, it is absolutely deadly. It can extract so many fish out of a small area with not even putting a single minnow on a hook, and it's just a fun way to catch them. My favorite way to fish them is to kind of be in bank fishing mode. So I'll anchor the boat up or spot lock and just cast a rig out to a high percentage spot and let them dance around kind of behind the boat until you get into the fish. And as soon as it sweeps into those fish, you'll feel a little tick on your line and you've got one or maybe even two on at a time. It's just crazy.
Is it just a springtime thing? I mean, I don't know any of these things, but when I look at the content, it seems like it's a cold water deal.
It excels in cold water, but I catch flies on the river around here all year long. There's no time it really shuts off, but there's times it really excels, and that is a little bit in colder water when maybe if the minnows aren't. I honestly don't know why. I can't tell you why. It does excel in the colder water. But if you've got fish in current and you need to pinpoint them very easily, this is absolutely a tool you should try. It's pretty awesome.
I mean,
and it's easy to do.
Yeah, it feels like the thing about it to me is like right away I feel like it's too far off the beaten path for somebody like me out in the Dakotas to really pay attention to. That was me for like a year or two. Like it just purely to me, I thought it was a novelty, but then, you know, I was getting the content, you know, and just kind of being more involved in the industry and my job and just kind of, you know, taking things a little bit more seriously. And I just see it reoccurring. And so now I've kind of like switched completely over where I get really fascinated and I love just sort of playing tackle and overthinking a lot of things. And I just love, like, I'm just obsessing over this, even if it's something maybe me personally never gets to do, but, you know, knowing the details, learning about it or just hearing something, you know, kind of nuancey, even if it is a little bit niche, it just sort of opens up your fishing IQ. And I think that's never a bad thing. One thing you mentioned already is like, it's a tool in the toolbox. I like the way you say that, because one thing I think is worth pointing out is, you know, nobody should ever be looking for the one, you know, the end all be all presentation. I don't think that ever exists. I think being a versatile angler, or, you know, just building your roster or your repertoire should almost always be the thing. Putting another tool in the toolbox should be, you know, what we're looking for to build our skills. Because I think spring fishing, you know, or fishing in spring, whether it's rivers or just lakes when they open up, you know, like on the opener, man, I'm guilty of it, but a lot of people just go out and they find one type of spot, and you know, they have a milk run of like spots that are all identical, and they just throw a jig and a minnow all day long. One presentation, one type of spot every year for the first couple of weeks of the open water season, or, you know, and you just don't see people being versatile until summer, until we knock the rust off, or until the fish spread out more,
sure,
we think. But I think in rivers, cold water, early spring, like pre-spawn, a lot of fish can be doing a lot of different things, and being versatile is a good thing. And so when you say it's another tool in the toolbox, that's exactly what I think I should be looking for. I think that's true.
I think so too. And the delivery system for these flies makes it a really versatile system. You don't just have to use flies. Basically, you know, you're just lobbing out a three-way rig. So you've got a three-way swivel with a little dropper below it to your weight, or a jig head if you want. You know, especially if your bigger fish are coming on a jig and plastic, make your dropper weight a jig and plastic if the current will allow you to do it. But anyways, you can substitute that fly for a plain hook and a minnow, a plain hook and a little piece of plastic, like a ringworm or a little 3-inch minnow type bait, you know, a little 3-inch power minnow or something like that. I mean, you can really get creative. It's just a bait delivery system, and a fly is part of that delivery if you want it to be a fly. But you can, you know, you can lob out this three-way rig and cast it into the high percentage areas with so many different things on the back. And then when you start getting into the warmer water, you know, if there's a bug hatch, well, then those those flies turn from, you know, a minnow imitator to a bug imitation. If you want to branch out onto the lakes, there's no stopping you from putting a fly behind a bottom bouncer or an inline weight if the fish are up on the surface eating bugs. You know, you can do so many different things with them, but they really do excel in that cold water when you're just fishing, you know, tight packs of fish for sure.
Tell me a little bit more about, you know, about rigging them and the type of spots that you're in. Like, you know, you talk about being in spot lock and, you know, thinking about rivers in the spring, in the current. I feel like having that leader behind that, you know, that three-way swivel and you know, even if you're in a state that doesn't allow you to have, say, two lures involved, you know, you've already identified, you know, it can be a three-way rig. You can have one fly back there, but the fact that they're nice and light, this is just in my head here, I'm envisioning, it kind of finds that current seam because it's so light. It's so light and exactly. Just, you know, it's just undulating. It's going to, even if you don't make a perfect cast, you know, or whatever it is, like, it's just going to, I just feel like it's going to be so lively back there. That's where I've, you know, sort of come around with my respect level for it is like right away, I just thought it was a novelty. But now all of a sudden I'm thinking, holy cow, this has tremendous application. I almost want to figure out a way to use it like other times, you know, like not even just like what you see, you know, with the current, you know, there's current everywhere. There's current in bridges on big lakes. And, you know, there's current, there's always a reason to, you know, be observing or you know, adjusting your presentation, you know, to current. And the efficiency of not having live bait, I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like I'm going on and on here, but I'm excited about the topic. Tell me a little bit more about that, like maybe some of the details and the functions of it. Like, you know, are there things that you do or you did early on, you know, just adjusting, you know, how far off the bottom, you know, the length of leader material, you know, just some of those things, some of the technical details of it that you feel like was part of your learning curve when you were building confidence yourself in such a thing.
Sure. Yeah. Basically, if you start the three-way swivel and one of your leads is going to be about 6 to 7 feet long, usually, and you nailed it when you give that fly some room to sway in the current helps that fly find the turbulence down there, so it's going to get tossed in the slack to fast water areas if you're coming through those current breaks, and that fly behaves accordingly as it's getting tossed around because it's so light. It just naturally it looks like a vulnerable minnow swimming down there, and the longer the leader that you have, the more you know, the more play you allow it to have to sway in that current. And, you know, based on the leader length that you have back there, like I said, is usually around six, just an arm length lead usually is good enough for a starting point. In order to keep that fly right around bottom, you're going to want your dropper length to be anywhere from 6 to 12-ish inches long. Usually I'm about 10 inches. You know, 10 inches on the dropper lead, you know, the closer you are to the boat and the heavier the sinker that you have, the more extended off the bottom that rig is, the lighter the sinker is. And the further away you are from the boat, the more that rig collapses and the lower that fly will sink to the bottom. So just depends on how far away you are from the boat can dictate the dropper length that you might want to choose. And you don't have to just cast them out either. When I started fishing flies, it was on the Winnebago system. And I just put a three-way rig down. And at the time, we were in deeper water and with a little more current. I think I had like 2-ounce sinkers on. And I was just dragging them upstream, like if you were just trolling a bottom bouncer, you know, around. And just kind of creeping upstream at, you know, 1/2 to 3/4 of a mile an hour. And just kind of tacking my boat back and forth. And you could even have the thing in a rod holder and just wait for it to bend over. If you didn't want to sit and pump the fly, it would still get bit just because of the way it behaves down there. So there's a lot of different ways to skin the cat, but my favorite way is to cast it out, because then you feel like you're almost jigging it at that point, you know? And so if you can identify a structural element like a rock pile that's breaking the current and maybe allowing fish to group up and hold in a little, you know, just out of the main current, that's a great place to pin up upstream of that and make a cast so that by the time the rig gets behind the boat, you're kind of right in that juicy spot where those fish should be laid up. But you can also cover a lot of water. I imagine you have a lot of, you know, sprawling sand duny type flats on your river out there, don't you?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
So what I would, you know, one thing you would think about out there is instead of just hoping to catch fish behind your boat, you know, you can take this rig and cast it off the side of your boat and just let the current naturally swing that sinker all the way from the side, you know, from like a perpendicular cast off the boat, perpendicular to the current. You can let it sweep all the way to the back of the boat. So now you're covering huge swaths of water and just let that sinker dance in and out of all those dunes. And eventually, in, you know, with a cast like that, you'll be able to pluck fish that are tucked in those dunes as effectively as anything. Or even if you, you know, even if you let it swing out behind the boat, just a matter, you know, you could literally take your trolling motor and jog right 15 feet and sweep it one way and then jog left 15 feet, sweep it the other way. And then you're just letting that sinker. And I usually use like a little pencil sinker, anywhere from, I would say, 1.5 to 1.5 ounces, depending on the depth and the current that you want to fish. But just finding the right weight and letting that sinker tuck that fly into all those nooks and crannies of those sandy dunes out there, I can't imagine that wouldn't work out there for you. It has to work.
Yeah, I just think, like, it's got that great finesse element. And in the spring with variable weather patterns and things like that, there's so often those off days. And out here, you know, I'm not speaking for everybody, but, you know, out here, you know, we quickly resort to the live bait deal. Like if a paddle tail is just too aggressive for them, you know, you get your jig as light as you can go, but then eventually the current takes it, you know, it's not effective. It's not efficient. You're not in the zone. And then it's live bait. Then it's a minnow, right? Cause if nothing's going to get bit, a minnow's going to get bit, right? That's the mentality. But now we're talking live bait. Now it's a cold day and you're reaching your hand in a minnow bucket and there's, and I just think like the finesse of a fly that it's removed from the weight, right? Like the fish, you know, it's non-invasive. You're casting the fish. Some of these spots are so small that if you drove your boat in there, you'd blow the fish out. But it's, sure. But finesse is the name of the game on those days. I just feel like this would be one of those, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like maybe this is one of those presentations that could help you go from, you know, a bad day to maybe a decent day, you know, like
it's, I think, got, so too,
you know, it might not be your A1 day one on the best bite of your life presentation. You know, we're probably doing other things then. This is just one of those tools in the toolbox. And I'm just envisioning if I see myself ever, you know, putting myself in a position to want to use this delivery system, I feel like the finesse element, or just finesse to the fish, because it's, you know, it's just such a delicate little fly down there.
And the cool part is, you know, as my friend Tommy Chemo says, some days you just need a heartbeat. And so there are some days where you just need to get your hand wet in that minnow bucket. But the cool thing is those days that are tough, a lot of times you're downsizing your jig and it's windy out and it's hard to keep bottom contact and make precise casts. You know what's so cool about this rig? You can stick a 1 ounce sinker on there and lob it into that hole that might only be 20 feet wide, but you're going to get right down in there and it's going to hold in that area, slowly sweeping around in there, but you're maintaining positive bottom contact at all times. It's, you know, you can cast crossways in the wind and still feel like you're in full control of your cast. And, but you still have something as light as a feather dancing around there better than you could ever manipulate the lightest jig on those tougher days with. So it's very forgiving. And if you have someone that is not very well versed at fishing current and making bottom contact and setting up proper cast through the right, you know, making the right sweeps through the prime areas, that let them lob this around, and you know that sinker puts that fly right where it needs to be. And if they just tap their rod tip around, they'll make that little fly dance around, or what? Like I said, whatever you want to put on the back of that three-way, it could be a hook in a plastic or a hook in a minnow or anything. But it's just a solid delivery system to fish tight spots, especially on those tougher, windier days, you know?
Oh, man, yeah. Like, who doesn't want to hear more about that? You know what I mean? Like, golly, I feel like this is such a long time coming. I should have called you years ago. But anyhow, yeah, I love where this is going. I love the concepts. I love the, you know, I just like hearing about your experience with it, for sure. I would say, you know, when I watch it on YouTube, when I see it, some of the guys that have more experience with it, like you kind of make casting it seem easy. Is it that easy, or are there some tips and tricks maybe to maybe your rod selection? You know, just anything you can talk about, you know, casting it out there, or just anything that you appreciate about a rod, or is this something that any jig rod can do? I mean, I'm sure that's right to some extent, but I mean, what's your opinion there?
First off, you want a little bit longer rod because you've got that longer lead and it's clumsy trying to cast a clumsy rig with a short rod. It just kind of sucks. So you want a 7+ foot rod, and you want that long rod so that as you're away from the boat, you're able to keep a lot of your line out of the water from getting pulled by the current. So you're more directly connected to your rig at that point. Keep your rod tip up in the air. And you're basically just making subtle little taps. Hardly with every tap, you're hardly even moving that sinker because the current will move it for you. So you're basically, all you're trying to do is just nudge those flies a few inches forward and then slowly let them drift back as if they were, it's almost like if it was a minnow that got startled and had to scoot and then just kind of resettles itself into the current. That's the action you're trying to do. The lighter the tip you have, the more forgiving you that action becomes on the tap, because as you tap up, that softer tip kind of cushions the contact with the sinker, so it doesn't really jolt the sinker off the bottom all too much. My rod of choice, I have two rods that I really like. They're JT Outdoor Products. One is a 7.1 JTX, and the other is a 7.9 JTX. If you look them up on their website, JTODP.com, you can look at those rods, but they have a perfect action for getting a good lob of that rig out there and then imparting the proper action into that rig. And when you do cast it, you want to make a nice lazy lob with it. You don't want to whip it out there. You don't want that rig helicoptering as it's sailing through the air. So as you lob it out there, take your non-rod hand and kind of grab the line as it's going out there, just as like if you were casting a slip bobber, and feather that line so that the whole rig, you know, is controlled and is laying out in its proper orientation before it lands on the water. And then you won't have any tangles, because if you just try to whip it out there and just let it plunk in the water, sometimes it can tangle on itself. So a nice controlled cast, subtle little touches to the fly, and all you're feeling for is just a little flick or a tick. You're not going to feel them chomp it like a jig in a 4-inch piece of plastic. You just don't feel that same aggressive, you know, thunk. But it's still a very gratifying bite. And then you just kind of lean into that fish. I can't help it. I set the hook hard. But you just kind of lean into that fish and you got them. And remember, most people that are tying flies are using light wire Aberdeen hooks. So if you do try to put the berries to the fish too much, especially a big fish pulling against the current, it's very easy to straighten a hook out. So I have hooks that are just light wire enough, but still beefy enough to support that extra weight if you hook into a big one. For the leader material, I did forget to mention that I use monofilament, because monofilament's a little more buoyant and naturally floating in the current than fluorocarbon. So you probably want to lean more on monofilament. I know plenty of guys that use fluorocarbon and they catch probably more fish than me, but for my personal preference is using mono. So, but yeah, as far as rod go, and then for line, I like a nice thin braid. Usually I'm using 6-pound braid, like a Suffix 832 or something like that. Just something that can cut through the current really well, so that the current isn't rushing that rig through the spot. You want to take your time, because like I said, you're usually fishing these through pretty small fishy spots. You want as many nice little taps through that spot as possible before the current finally sweeps your sinker away. And if you feel yourself getting carried away too easily, just put a little bit heavier weight on. It's not gonna hurt anything, and you'll eventually find the right combination of your weight and your action that you're imparting into it, and hopefully you're successful with it.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, Man, I just want to keep going on and on. I want to hear more stories. We would have to start a whole nother podcast, so we are going to have to wrap this up. But I just feel like...
That's all right.
We've covered some... I just feel like just on this topic alone, you know, hearing your story is very fun. I really enjoy it. It gives a lot of context, I feel like, to, you know, just, the information and your explanation on these things, just knowing your experience, where it comes from, and just how much experience you have and how diverse your experience, fishing experience, has been since a young age. And so I really appreciate that and respect that a lot. And I feel like this is probably, for me personally, this is probably like my favorite sounding walleye presentation that I've never tried. So I can't wait to try it.
That's awesome, Taylor.
Like, I kind of already knew that. Like I said, I would say probably like 5 years ago, I thought it was a novelty thing that was so far removed from me that, other than maybe something work related, right? Like being a videographer for JMO, like that takes me play. Like maybe I'll see it then or there or whatever. But me personally, in my own boat, it was so far off my radar. And then the last couple of years, I've just thought to myself, like, whoa, I need to, you know, first of all, thinking that way is not like, don't ever count something out. Even if somebody fishes another species, if somebody's really just like fishes a lot, you ought to respect their opinion. And so I feel like I've started to really just open up and listen to things from all different places across the planet and all these things. But I feel like is something so close to home as, you know, where you see a lot on the Mississippi River and, you know, just like, you know, in the heart of the Midwest there, a lot of these springtime, you know, fly videos for walleyes on YouTube, it's like, man, I've really kind of switched that into just this little sort of infatuation or sort of side piece, some obsession. And this conversation just really, really puts the nail in the coffin for me. And I'm glad, you know, talking about this setup, so important. Painting the picture of the type of spots that you would like to utilize it in, but also just identifying that it's versatile and you can do a lot with it. This delivery system of, you know, a three-way rig, essentially. And you can cycle whatever, you know, traveling bait behind your sinker system as you want. But these flies, I feel like, do have that little, you know, that niche. But you look back on all the springs where I just think about looking back on some of the springs where of the days that I got to go fishing, there was more of them were the tough days than the good days. I think a lot of people can relate to that. We never get to go all the time on all the awesome days where I can use whatever presentation I want in the same spot all day long and just catch all the big fish. You know, to be a versatile angler, to have a little bit higher fishing IQ and have more tools in your own toolbox, you know, that you have even the slightest amount of confidence in, you know, is so key and crucial. And in the spring, you know, these rivers or even just lakes, when they open up in there, here in the Dakotas, we can fish walleyes year round. So here, you know, we're going to have sloughs and we're going to have, you know, some of the bigger bodies of water are going to start opening up. There's current situations in all of them. And, but just the finesse and no bait required, you know, sort of, application to this, I feel like, is attractive to me. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't mind saying that. And but anyways, let's wrap this up. It's my fault. But Joe, so much great information in this. We're just tapping, you know, we're just, it's tip of the iceberg here. I didn't hear nearly enough personal stories from you. I want to keep getting to know you. Hopefully you'd be down to come on again down the road someday. But for now, anything else that totally comes to mind that you have to throw out there, do it. Otherwise, you know, promote yourself, your content, where people can find you if they ever have questions or anything like that, man. Go ahead.
Well, two things. Yeah, you can find me on easiest places, Facebook. I encourage you to go to my YouTube channel if you want to take a look at those videos. I try to be really in depth on how to put it all together, and then I follow it up. I went to the river and just played with some little fish one day, but you can study my retrieve and hopefully pick up enough so that you have enough confidence going out there. I will give you a little teaser. I've been, you know, when I say you can substitute it on some with some other things, I've been playing with this with another lure, and I can't say what it is yet because I want it to prove itself to me beyond a shadow of a doubt. But if I get it going, I'll make sure to share it with you guys. but there's more than one way to skin a cat with this presentation, and it's just a lot of fun. But yeah, go check out those videos. I'd appreciate it, and then feel free to follow me throughout the year. We're going to be playing in some fun tournaments, and I'd be happy to come back at any time you need a guest and shoot the breeze with you, man.
Dude, I appreciate it. That's, I can't say it any different, man. I'm just cheesing over this, and just really glad that we were able to get in touch.